Hello and welcome to Automators, the automation podcast where we talk about grabbing your technology and encouraging it to do your bidding for you. This is our post-sequicentennial episode because we had some feedback from the last episode that 150 is apparently sequicentennial, which is great because I'm joined by my pal David Sparks as always. Hey David, how are you?
Hey, Rose, happy past sesquicentennial day, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a good show to, be the 151st because, you know, we're moving into the next round of what we're going to be doing with Automators and continuing on with recording the show. And so we have brought somebody onto the show who's been doing things with automation and Apple platforms for a very long time. Welcome back to the show, Ken Case.
Hi, thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Well, Ken, how can we avoid inviting you? I mean, you got your OmniFocus on Vision Pro ahead of Apple's reminders. I mean, I love it. So Ken is the head honcho over at the Omni Group. That's your official title, right? You have the hat that says head honcho on it. But, and Rose and I have talked in the past about how enthusiastic we are about the way you guys have been embracing automation with the stuff you're doing. So we thought it would be fun to have you on the show today to kind of talk through how you see the automation picture in the Apple ecosystem. We're going to talk about various platforms. We're going to talk some stuff about OmniApps. We're also going to talk about where Ken uses automation in his day-to-day stuff. And we really appreciate you taking the time to come in today.
Oh, it's always great to be talking with you both. So thank you.
Yeah. And in the bonus section for those members of Automators Max, which is the ad-free extended version of the show, Ken has gone deep with the Vision Pro. He's got thoughts. We're going to be talking about that in Automators Max today. But let's start with automation, Ken. One of the questions both Rose and I get a lot, because we talk about AppleScript quite often on the show, because so often it is like the right tool for the job. But people often ask me, should I bother learning AppleScript at this point? You know, and I think that is something, it's an interesting question that has multiple answers. But what is your thought on AppleScript here in 2024?
That is an interesting thought. So for some people, it's really easy to learn. Yeah. For other people, it just, it's not the way they think. And so I think it kind of depends on whether you find it approachable or not, as to whether it's worth digging into or not. It's not, I don't feel like it's going away. There's certainly still things that you can only do in AppleScript. There was an attempt, a decade ago to kind of reskin it with some JavaScript stuff, but really the JavaScript being applied to Apple events it was kind of a mismatch, and it didn't ever really, I think some people still use it that way, but I think the AppleScript language is the native way to speak those Apple events, and you can do more things actually with it that way than you can with the JavaScript stuff. Nothing wrong with scripting in JavaScript. We'll get to that later. But
yeah. I agree. But, and honestly, first thing I always tell people is, well, it only works on the Mac. So that's
absolutely an important
thing.
Part.
And yeah. If only Apple had enabled Apple events in the early days of iOS, but they didn't. So it doesn't work there. But what, in some ways, I tell people, the less experience you have programming, the more likely you are to like AppleScript. I feel like traditionally trained programmers, it breaks their brains more than it does novices, because it's so different.
I agree. it's just not the way that programmers think. And so that's why there is such a temptation to, maybe I should try this JavaScript scripting of Apple instead.
As somebody who has tried both, I have encountered something which a few developers kind of warned me about, that for some reason, the JavaScript version of AppleScript doesn't necessarily quite pick up on everything. Like, there's just some things that work if you write it in AppleScript. It doesn't quite work in JavaScript, which is a shame because I use JavaScript in my day job, so it should be so easy. But as it is, I occasionally have to Google how to declare object in AppleScript, only to find somebody who's got a blog post telling me the correct way to solve the problem that I'm actually trying to solve, which is not necessarily using weird arrays or anything like that at all. So yeah, it's good that it's there, but it is a shame that it's not on all the platforms.
Yeah, the other thing I always tell people is you don't need to turn learning AppleScript into a career. Really all you need, get Sal's book, AppleScript 1, 2, 3. It's great, foundation. He's got some good scripts in there. But then you combine that with something like, you know, online resources like GitHub or, and honestly, at this point, ChatGPT, and you can probably put AppleScript together as needed without encyclopedic knowledge of it. You just need to kind of understand the basics. And between the AI and the existing corpus out there on all these websites, you're probably going to be able to make what you need. I do that all the time. I rarely write one from scratch.
I think that was part of how it was designed too, right? The idea was not that you would have an encyclopedic knowledge of the language. It was that you would try to express things in an English language. And that's why it rubs programmers in such a weird way sometimes.
Yeah, but I've always appreciated with OmniGroup apps the way, especially back in the day, you guys were there early with AppleScript support in your apps. And there were a lot of Apple scripts I used to use in OmniFocus, you know, the app of yours that I use the most. And there were so many great scripts written by your team and people out in the world. But that's kind of evolved. We're going to get to that in a bit, but I'm glad you kind of feel the same though. I don't think there's a certain element out there that says, well, AppleScript, that's old and don't bother, it's not worth it. But I think there's still things that only AppleScript can do if you're on the Mac.
Some of those scripts, I think a lot of the scripts you're talking about, in fact, will still run just fine on the Mac. But but only running on the Mac, I think, is the biggest limitation that has driven us away from investing a lot more in AppleScript because, you know, we're not only on the Mac anymore.
Yeah. And I've heard from multiple people inside Apple that talk about, they use it all the time on their stuff. And I mean, even though there's a part of me that feels like I'm sure there's a contingent at Apple that doesn't like this ancient scripting language in their operating system. There's no way they can get rid of it. Not to mention, it would take time and effort and money to get rid of it if they wanted. So I think it's there for the long term. You don't have to worry about it like getting deprecated suddenly. And again, with the combination of web resources and AI, I'm hearing from people all the time that are putting together legitimate Apple scripts who don't really know a lick of programming because of those resources.
Right.
All right. Okay. That was the grandfather of the group.
Yeah. And I mean, after we had AppleScript for a very long time, we got Workflow, and that actually already had integration with all the Omni apps because you were supporting URL schemes at the time, for all of these things, which, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe URL schemes are actually still pretty important because they are part of how the Omni apps communicate with each other via scripts, at least on iOS, to pass information around, aren't they?
Yeah. So when we, first brought our apps to iOS, or specifically when we brought OmniFocus to the iPhone for the App Store launch, we knew right away that people would want to be able to capture stuff from like the web page they were looking at and send it to their inbox and do the same sort of things they were doing on the Mac. And we didn't have AppleScript, so we had to think, well, how are we going to handle this? And so right there from day one, we included a little URL scheme to say, all right, I want to add this thing to my inbox. And then you could add a shortcut to Safari on your iPhone that would call that thing and send the current page's URL over to it. And then over time, as the... several years down the road, ended up still being the only way that iOS apps could talk to each other. And so, of course, when the people started developing more options in that ecosystem where maybe you'd want to have something get called back with the results, so you'd call from one app to another. And so we had these X callback URLs. And then that's what Workflow started building their stuff on, which then eventually became shortcuts. And But of course, at this point, Shortcuts now has much richer ways of integrating with apps. Apps can build their own extensions that that run real code instead of just parsing URLs back and forth. But that's something that you can use to talk with Shortcuts. It's not something you can use to talk between your own apps very easily. And so, yes, we do still use our URLs for that.
Yeah. And of course, because the way that the Omni apps work, it's not the all of my data is stored on the Omni servers. I can use OmniSync to, sync my OmniFocus database around and even store files and so on, but I don't have to use that. So you do have to be a little creative, perhaps, with the way that you connect things together. But I think that that also has forced you to think outside of the box, because I know, before we really had shortcuts back when we still had workflow, there were examples of Python scripts to create projects from templates using task paper format on iOS. It was using, I think it was Editorial, the app for iOS. And I remember seeing that and going, like, I was already like firmly like, I need OmniFocus in my life and using it at that point. But then it was like, okay, they've taken the standard and then they've added scripting. They've written the script and they're just giving it to me so that I can do all of these things, which I've been trying to do. This is perfect. I love it. And, you know, I think, you know, there's been so much scripting around for such a long time that it's really nice to see the support for shortcuts and so on that you've added, where, for example, especially with OmniFocus, they've added the new shortcuts style of actions recently, which allow you to get data into shortcuts and then parse it and use it and then, you know, potentially send it back. So I can get a list of my projects out of OmniFocus if I want to use with everything else, which, you know, I think the whole point of automation and scripting is that nothing has to be an island anymore. You can integrate everything with everything else. You know, Omni Group doesn't necessarily have to know about, you know, all the weird systems that I'm using at work for me to write a shortcut that pulls some information out of OmniFocus and ta-da, magic happens, or click a button and these three things get pulled together and turned into my OmniFocus task, which, thanks to your shortcut support in particular, which works on macOS as well as iOS, and thank you for that. I really appreciate that. You know, I can do all of that. And I think that that's where shortcuts coming to the Mac in particular has definitely helped us, because that, you know, it previously was AppleScript on the Mac, shortcuts on iOS and iPad. And, you know, it was an either or kind of situation. And now we're getting to the point where shortcuts is everywhere. And AppleScript is still stuck on the Mac, but then you've added your own scripting on top of this, which we can then use within the application and even between the applications to really control anything you want. It feels like every time I look at Omni Automation and what you've been adding, it feels like you've just added like a whole new feature set. And it's not like, you know, a tiny thin one. It's, you know, the entire Encyclopedia Britannica has just been added as an appendium to the library that's already there of features, which is very, very cool.
Oh, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Yeah, it's really fun to, I mean, it's always been fun to integrate with automation technologies, whether it was AppleScript or URLs or shortcuts. But it's also fun to have something built into our apps where we know we can rely on it being available wherever we're able to take it. And in this case, since we're building it on top of Apple's JavaScript core framework, anywhere that JavaScript core is available to us, we've tried to make the same stuff as available within the app for automation. And that means we can expose all of our you know, like for OmniFocus, we will expose projects and perspectives and tags and so on. And they all have turn into objects in JavaScript land, and then you can just work with them. And that is a model that programmers feel much more comfortable with. But I know it's very intimidating for people who are not programmers. So we, you know, while we think it's important to have those levels of automation, really a lot of automation is also about just thinking about ways to expose to make life simpler for people, whether or not they know how to write any code. And so things like building your own custom perspectives, or starting out with some built-in perspectives that have the few useful things, and you see you can just select between them. That's a form of automation, that we had all of the same data in OmniFocus 1, but it didn't have all those perspectives until 1.5. And then they got a lot much richer when we added perspective rules in version 3. And then we just we're in the process of adding another round of rules right now for OmniFocus 4.2. And exposing them to JavaScript automation at the same time. So it's a lot of fun. See how this all can build on itself.
Yeah, that the well runs deep, you know, and the thing is that gives users so much power, right? And I guess you're right. Let's break it down on level there, because I do want to talk more about Omni automation, because that was a very interesting decision. When I heard you were doing it, I was like, wow, that you bit off a lot with that. But before I get to that, the idea that I don't need to learn JavaScript, but I can program your app to a certain extent. And custom perspectives are, for most people, I think, super powerful, right? I mean, for me, I know that like I have a bunch of crazy ones, and I make them sometimes as disposable, and sometimes I make them and I use them for years. But you have a lot of sliders and buttons in there where you can really kind of like tune in what you want to do with your automation. And that is something that users get kind of out of the gate. And it reminds me of the problem with task managers. People say, well, there's so many different task managers, but nothing does what I want to do. So you guys kind of took the approach of, well, we'll let you make it the way you want it. At least that's my impression from the outside.
Yeah, well, obviously we started with the outliner that was just sort of generic, mm-hmm. and it was being scripted in order to turn it into this stuff. You know, that Ethan had taken it and built his own set of scripts around it, and Kurt Clifton had done the same, and they were, you know, automating one of our outlining tool to start doing their task management. And the whole reason we kind of came to building OmniFocus is we realized, well, we could either try to make OmniOutliner just a better host for all of this automation. And we did a bit of that. We made it more efficient and so on. Or maybe we could do a more batteries included kind of approach where it's already set up. You just sit down, you start plugging in your tasks, and it already has these different views in it.
Well, I think you made the right decision for sure there, but I do also, you know, think that that's a piece of it that I don't think people appreciate. Like when I think about my own, cause I've been thinking a lot lately about my own thoughts on task managers, and it's really evolved over the years. And like where I started, like I was all in with David Allen and getting things done. And now there's very little of that that I use, but OmniFocus can still adjust to the way I use it because of that flexibility. But then you decide, now I want to switch over to Omni automation because, you know, we had a situation, you know, AppleScript is great only on the Mac. The mobile platforms are increasingly important, especially with something like task management, but you guys don't really have a solution. You know, Shortcuts is good to a certain extent, but it doesn't give you the system access that you would prefer. And you know, like, well, let's just roll our own automation scheme. I mean, how did we even come to that decision?
Well, we wanted to do more of the automation stuff that we were doing on the Mac, but be able to do it everywhere. So we started thinking about, well, what's the right environment to do that? We looked at, you know, maybe doing Python, maybe, you know, different languages that people are using. Python certainly is a nice approachable language for a lot of people. But the number one language, and at the time, at least when we were doing our research, that the most people knew how to use was JavaScript because of the web. So, well, let's go ahead and use JavaScript. And one of the advantages of JavaScript was that Apple has a built-in implementation, of course, also because of the web, that was available on their platforms that we could build on top of. So they have JavaScript Core, where they have done a lot of performance work to make sure it runs very, very fast. And so you don't even have to feel like you're using, like when we started rebuilding some of the sample scripts that we had that were written in AppleScript previously, and now they were written in Omni Automation JavaScript, they would often run 10 times faster or more because we didn't have to talk to another process across this, this bridge and so on. That ends up opening the door to a lot more applications when the code you're running just runs faster. You feel a lot more comfortable using it to do things like, oh, I'm going to scan for all of these tasks.
Or like me, I have a script that, you know, every so often I'm using an iPhone that's just running the script like every 15 minutes or so to just process all of my inbox tasks, which I've got a confession to make, folks. I've got 120 items in my inbox right now. I'm sorry. But it still runs lightning fast, even though it's processing every single one of those 120 items, looking to see if it can automatically categorize and file those away for me, which is great. And one of the things that, you know, I'm really appreciating about Omni Automation, obviously, I'm a web developer, so I can write JavaScript, but a lot of the time I'll open the Omni Automation site and I'll just have a look at, you know, the sample scripts and so on that are there. And there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to find something that's either exactly what I'm looking for or like 80, 90% of the way to what I'm looking for there already, because obviously, you know, Sal has been working with you and writing a whole bunch of these scripts. And I'm sure some of the scripts have come from, you know, people like yourself inside of Omni Group. But there's also, you know, I see people asking in the Omni Slack as well for things all the time and finding, oh, here's how I do that. And here's my script. Ta-da. And I find that, you know, the fact that there's a community around this as well, just like, you know, Drafts, another iOS and macOS app, also has JavaScript scripting. They have a little community where they're sharing actions and so on as well. I find that there's, you know, there's a good overlap there with what other people want and what you want, which then, you know, ends up with, you know, a completely customizable system, you know, with, you know, scripting that doesn't feel like I actually need to write code about 90% of the time, I'd say. Like, and the other 10% is because I'm a weirdo and I like writing code. I don't feel like I have to write it to you know, do the things that I want or need to do to just, you know, take advantage of the cool features that are there.
Well, it's fun to see the way that people in the community have built on top of this and built their own things and started hooking things up to other places, started hooking up Omni Automation to ChatGPT and feeding it the definitions and then asking ChatGPT to generate this plugin for them. And then ChatGPT will do 90% of it, sometimes the whole thing. And it's crazy. Yeah.
It's really impressive, Ken. And I mean, the reason we are such fans of the Omni Group is because of you guys zigging where else is zagging. I feel like right now, a lot of the movement, especially on mobile, is on interface design. There's a lot of people exploring. A great one that stands out in my mind is Carrot Weather, like build your own interface kind of app. And I think that's great. And I think people really like that. But you guys found a way to make your apps, and it's not just OmniFocus. I think at this point it's Omni Outliner, Omni Graffle, I think is Omni Plan on this JavaScript as well.
Yep. Yeah. So they all have it.
You've got all your apps and you've made them almost infinitely addressable. I would say even more addressable than they were with AppleScript, but where you create an automation that installs across all Apple platforms. And it's just, it's something to behold. As someone who makes the Automators podcast, of course I love it, but I think that I'm not sure it's sunk in for everybody that, like, if you've got this app and there's a feature you want, you are a couple Google searches away from probably finding it already built. And it's just, you just add the features that you want. I have customized my OmniFocus install. I haven't gone completely over the deep end with it, but there's like 7 or 8 that I use that make the app better. And I just, you know, that's really impressive. And as an automator, we all really appreciate the amount of work that must have taken to get there.
Oh, thank you. It's again, it's really rewarding to work on this stuff. Especially when we see how it makes a difference in people's lives. And when we watch things and we see the kinds of friction that that people are running into when they're using an app or when they're trying to run some automation, you know, I remember, Rosemary, you mentioned earlier that back in the early days of our URL automation on the iPhone, you know, that we had written this script that would talk to editorial and fill out a whole project and then send it over to OmniFocus at one. But what that was born from was seeing somebody else write a script that would send one task at a time, because that was the URL support that we had, was that original capture of, I'm going to add one thing, and then they would have to do it again. And we added callback support so you could get back to the original app, but then it would flip back and forth from one app to the other for every task it was trying to add. And it was when I tried that out or saw the movie of that, I'm like, oh, we can make this so much better. Let's just make a mode where you can add a whole task paper set of input of tasks all at once and do that. And, you know, that same sort of thing still happens today. Like when we started looking at Omni Automation on the Apple Vision Pro, we realized, oh, it's really awkward to download something from the Omni Automation website and one of these plugins and try to, you know, it ends up in your downloads folder and then you have to go to the Files app and you have to open it and all of this sort of mess there. And so we just added another URL scheme affordance that says, open this URL plugin and go straight for the install logic where, you know, you get the approval prompt and everything else that we did before. We don't want people to accidentally open a plugin and install some virus or something, but it just makes it so much easier. And whenever we see those sorts of awkward things, so those are the kinds of sharp edges that we're trying to polish down.
Mm, yeah. I mean, what I find really interesting as well is, you know, seeing what problems other people are trying to solve in OmniFocus and how they're trying to solve them. And two of the scripts actually that continually fascinate me around OmniFocus are the Eisenhower matrix and the Kanban views, where people are essentially, you know, having a script create multiple OmniFocus windows so that they can move tasks into a particular window to represent like a column in the Kanban view or a quadrant in the Eisenhower matrix. And I found that really interesting because that is not how I see and process a lot of my tasks. But it sounds to me like, you know, because I also remember the good old days of running a URL scheme and you'd like just press it, and then you'd sit back and try not to touch your device for the entire time because it was flicking back and forth between, like, you know, three applications 17 times, and then finally it would come back and say it was done. But it sounds like you're seeing, you know, what people are solving with this, and, you know, looking for ways to make everything better, potentially even then adding features into OmniFocus itself, and all of the other apps as well, as a result of what people are scripting.
Yeah, absolutely. In 4.2, which is currently in test flight, OmniFocus 4.2, we added a button. We saw that one of the things that people often wanted to do was to filter things by date. And the only way to do that in earlier versions, like if you just wanted a perspective that showed you things that were past due, that had been deferred in the past and then had fallen off of your forecast because they were no longer forward-looking, mm-hmm. you had to write a script that would go through your database and find all of those tasks. And instead, now we just added a perspective rule that says, okay, well, you can search for any date from any date field between any set of date ranges. And so then you can write a simple rule that's much more efficient that lets you go straight to that that list of tasks. But at the same time, we... we wanted to open the door so that people who were doing automation with perspectives could make that even easier. So we added a notion of scripting the rules in a perspective so you can say, okay, well, here are the projects that I want to see in a perspective or something. Have your plugin do that directly.
Are those dates relative as well? Will you be able to?
Yeah, those dates are relative. They actually use the same smart date input that that we use, you know, in like quick entry and so on. So you can say, I want to see all of the things from last Monday to next Thursday or whatever, and give it that window.
All right. Well, I just got off the beta train and now I'm getting back on.
Yeah, I'm discovering right now that Tesla on my Mac is just crashing and says that you can't connect to App Store Connect. So I'm going to have to make sure that I'm running the latest version again later. It's one of these things where, you know, I know that the way that the Omni Group handles feature requests is something that some people don't really appreciate. But as somebody who also deals with feature requests, I appreciate it because you don't just have like a public board where everybody puts up their feature requests and then, you know, people just go, yes, me too. It's, you know, you actually request that people email the support folks because sometimes I'm guessing the answer is actually, oh, that is a feature. You can already do that right now. It's a checkbox in the preferences, but then you collect them internally, so that you have, you know, your list of features that you can work on. And so the fact that you have that and then you're combining it with, you know, what people are doing through automation and what people are trying to do through automation as well. You know, there's one of the scripts that I'm seeing here is adding a FaceTime task, and I'm there going, okay, that could be potentially useful for me, but I don't necessarily need a FaceTime task. Maybe I need, you know, a Zoom task. Well, you know, Zoom's got an API. I could look at, you know, integrating with that potentially. You know, and maybe at some point, if there were enough demand for it, I can't imagine that a huge number of people would want Zoom integration with OmniFocus. That seems a little bit weird. But, you know, maybe, you know, if enough people wanted it, then, you know, I guess that's something that you could consider. But as it is, you know, there's so many things right now, especially with the rise of AI and ChatGPT, that people are, I guess, constantly going like, oh, right, so I want a packing list, but I don't want to write a packing list. Well, maybe I can get ChatGPT to write me a packing list for this place. You know, and if it puts bananas on the packing list, at least you can blame ChatGPT rather than OmniFocus itself, right?
This episode of Automators is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the right tools to help you find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When I've been looking for a new job or potentially looking at somebody who might be hired for a role, then it's always really important to find out not just who they are on paper, but a little bit more about them and places where they've worked before. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. It has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. Hiring is easy when you have that many quality candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. LinkedIn also knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. That's why they're constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. It's easy to see why 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/automators. That's linkedin.com/automators to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
So Rose talked about AI before the break, and I know that's something that you guys are kind of interested in over there, but you know, you've got this existing automation model. What are your thoughts on it in terms of the types of software that you make at the Omni Group, and do you see that as a future automation tool?
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's a great tool for a lot of things. At the same time, there, I don't know about everybody else. Certainly, I'm pretty privacy conscious, and so one of the concerns that I have whenever I'm thinking about tools like ChatGPT is, what's happening to this information that I'm feeding it? Where is it going? Who's keeping it? How's it? You know, it's somebody else's computer. So I really actually love all the work that that the community is now putting into tools like Llama and being able to, you know, host your own local AI engine, I guess, and talk to that. And
so you give it your own data. It doesn't go to the cloud, and it's working on what you
do. It stays on your local machine, and you can, you know, people have now built ChatGPT like interfaces, you know, API interfaces to it, so you can use the exact same API calls to your local device that you would have used to ChatGPT, and then talk to these local models instead of talking to a model that is on somebody else's computer. And so, but that said, you know, setting that question aside, because again, it's not relevant to everybody. I think there is a lot of power around just being able to ask a question, get an answer. It might not be right, but a Google search might not be right either. It might send you a Stack Overflow page that has a bunch of out of date information or just wrong information. And AI will do the same thing sometimes. So, you know, it's not a genie, but sometimes it will give you the inspiration you need or the next step toward the problem that you're working on. And I think it, and it makes sense to leverage that.
Yeah. I keep referring to it as an intern, like it gives you an intern level answer, but it doesn't, you don't want to necessarily hit send after the intern writes the answer.
Yeah. A little like supervising a self-driving car. You don't want to give it full control, but it's okay for it to maybe maintain a following distance.
Although the AI email response is less likely to kill you. That there is that.
That's right.
But at the same time, if you don't proofread the packing list that ChatGPT spits out and you just blindly follow it and you pack bananas, but you don't pack underwear, that feels like that could end up being a little bit of a problem when you get to wherever it is you're going. Packing lists in particular are very close, very important to me right now, because I was literally building one before we sat down to record the show, because I need to do some travel in the next couple of weeks. And the fact that, you know, I can, you know, use the automations to do that. And then what I've been doing, and I don't know how common this is with folks, so I've been experimenting with pulling my packing lists out of OmniFocus and putting them into Omni Outliner, because then I have an Omni Outliner file that I can save and reuse, obviously, again and again, and reference back to. Not only that, I also don't have like 48 different tasks that are due tomorrow or, you know, whenever it is in OmniFocus, because the thing that's really due is packing. The fact that, you know, I need to pack this battery pack and that charger and, you know, socks or whatever, that I don't need the individual detail of those three, but the interoperability between these has been, for me, incredibly useful. And I'm imagining it is for other folks as well. I don't know if other folks are also doing the packing list approach in Omni Outliner. You know, it's an approach. I know that there's a lot of connections that you've built between them. Has anybody done anything completely crazy? I say crazy, I mean good crazy. Like build a visual representation of their task system in OmniGraffle through Omni Automation yet? Is that something people are trying, or are they just experimenting with all the cool things out there?
That's a good question. I don't know whether anybody has done that or not. I have not seen that specifically. I have seen people map their OmniFocus data to a Gantt chart and OmniPlan. I have seen, I usually look at it at the lower level, where I will take the OmniFocus sync transactions that are, you know, this sort of graph of this device did this change and this other device did that change, and I'm trying to work that out. And I'll take that and I'll visualize it in OmniGraffle. And I use automation to do that. You know, it's I have a script that runs, and then it generates some output in the dot format, which then the graph is format, which then OmniGraffle opens, and then I can annotate it and work with it there. Mm-hmm. But
I do think there's a huge opportunity, though, for AI to help with task management. I think a lot of people suffer because they have too much. They feel defeated by it, and they're fighting a losing battle. And to me, a lot of it is this idea of pull versus push-based productivity, where people think that they have to do what their task manager tells them to do, and then they just feel defeated. And, you know, I think AI, and in a future where Apple has AI baked into the operating system, giving you what you need without sending a user to the cloud, I could see like that kind of data about where it was generated, when it was done, how long it's been sitting there, becoming a super useful tool for people to say, you know, you're not going to do all this stuff, but here's three things that we think you probably would really want to do today. And like, just do that for me. And especially if it can work with calendar data at the same time to say, oh, I see you have, you know, some availability. Why don't you knock off two or three of these big ones with the large time estimates, and we'll go ahead and create a block for you. I mean, I could see this stuff really helping people in a way that a lot of task management just can't yet. And I think there's a lot of angst out there with people and task management because of that, so much so that they kind of give up on it and they suffer because then they don't spend their time doing the right things. And so I really do feel like you guys building everything in Swift UI, kind of going all in, gives you the ability, hopefully, to take advantage of that when those tools arrive.
I really look forward to seeing what Apple ends up doing in this space, for sure.
Well, one of the things that I've been playing with is using shortcuts to figure out, you know, like in my calendar right now, how long do I actually have free? And then using that to run an Omni automation script to say, okay, like here are a choice of like two or three tasks that you could do in the next, you've got 45 minutes. This one takes 15 minutes. This one takes 25 minutes. And this one's going to take half an hour, you know, pick one of those. And all it does then is it opens it. It does not mark it as done. I made that mistake the first time around and then didn't actually do the task because I got sidetracked and had many, many regrets that I did not do it. I think that the way that we can, you know, pull out information from the other apps because of, you know, automation support everywhere is becoming so useful for this. For me, I would love an AI to just be like, hey, I can see that you're sitting around watching Grey's Anatomy again. maybe you should try doing a task. You know, you just need to clean the mirrors in the bathroom. It'll take 2 minutes. Do you want to go do that? Having something that actually actively suggests that would be really cool. But as it is, you know, I feel like Omni is probably ready for that because you have, you know, all of this data already available and surfaceable through scripting language. So, you know, maybe if we get, Siri AI is, you know, as Siri already has some AI built into it, doesn't it, with suggesting things, you know, it'll suggest OmniFocus if you frequently open OmniFocus when you get to a location and so on. But if we get Siri AI 2.0 this summer, then, I'm guessing OmniGroup will do what they always do, which is look at the roadmap and go, huh, that was a really good idea. How can we fit that in with whatever Apple's thrown at us? It'll be very cool to see, what people can do with this sort of thing as we, you know, as we progress with all of it.
One of the fun things about AI in this space, I think, is that unlike AI being used to write your code or AI being used to, you know, maybe write a paper about a topic that you don't know very much, so you're having it kind of do your research for you as well. In this case, when AI is giving you a list of tasks, in theory, at least, you're the person then implementing each one of those tasks, and you're reviewing it in the process. You're not going to do something that doesn't make sense. If you're just writing some code and you feed it to the computer and then it runs the code, it'll do something that doesn't make sense, and you could have some bad consequences down the line. Or if you're feeding it to a car driving, again, the same thing. But if you're feeding yourself a list of things, maybe not the bit about leaving off the underwear from your packing list, but yeah. In a lot of cases, it's at least much easier for you to review and decide, does this truly make sense? You know what your tasks are about.
Yeah. And like, for instance, as an example, mine isn't as fancy as Rose's, but what I do is I'll have a block of time to say, we're making a podcast. So I usually have a 2-hour block on Mondays to say podcast work. And then I've got a folder in OmniFocus, I'm sorry, that includes sub projects for the various podcasts I make. And there's tasks that are generated in there, some through automation, some manually, but they have flags and tags and all sorts of indicators of importance. So I made a custom perspective that looks at that folder and does its best to surface the things I should be working on during that 2-hour block. Now, I'm not going to get all of them done, but hopefully I'm checking them off in order of priority. But what I would prefer is an AI to get smart enough to do that reliably for me and say, hey, I want to spend 2 hours working on the sales presentation, or I want to work 2 hours on podcasts. Give me the things you think I should do. And like that to me is a great use of AI. It doesn't need to go out, like you said, to the internet and figure out research questions. It just needs to look at your data and decide what's important. And hopefully, because it's in this theoretical world, it's local to my machine, it can see historically what I actually do. And, you know, what, you know, it gets a bunch of information. You guys have so much information in that database. And that's one of the reasons you're thinking forward. You updated the database format a few years ago, but you've got so much information there that I think an AI could actually do a pretty clever job of surfacing that for me. And then it's like, then the pressure isn't that, oh, I have to do all this stuff, but no, it's giving me, it's like my little buddy here, giving me some things I can pull from that'll make me feel like I'm making progress. And I'm excited about that. And I think that, you know, you guys are in a great spot to do that. Another thing you've really done well is this whole voice control thing. I mean, I think it's largely Sal's going, but I'm not sure. Maybe there are gang people on your team helping as well, but Sal has written this crazy voice control system, again, not just for OmniFocus, but for, I think, all of your apps at this point, where yeah, you can sit and talk to them and they just work. And you could think about it as an accessibility feature, but honestly what it is, it's an Apple Vision Pro feature. As you're sitting there with that face computer on and you just start talking and OmniFocus just starts going off to the races for you. I mean, that was another big move of automation that you guys kind of jumped on that nobody saw coming.
That was kind of a fun one. Sal definitely saw an opportunity there where he, you know, was thinking about how people would interact with computers with their voice. And he wanted to be able to write some scripts around that and write his own custom, you know, basically vocabulary for how you talk to an app. And so what he asked us for is, well, you have this great Omni automation support. You have, you know, the ability to create plugins and actions and so on. What if you could trigger those with your voice? And so we just ended up writing a little bit of glue code for, you know, let's hook up the voice activation to the plugin system. And then Sal did the heavy lifting of, all right, now let's sit down and write 100 different things that you might do with that. Now that's available. And yeah, that's a great use on the Apple Vision Pro, where you might, you know, the three built-in forms of input that you have on the Apple Vision Pro are your eyes with the, you know, gaze tracking. You have your hands that you can tap your fingers together to click on something, and then, or tap on something, I think is their official terminology. And then you have your voice. And personally, when I use the Apple Vision Pro, I actually use a keyboard much more often because a lot of the work that I do involves the keyboard. But if you happen to just be wandering around only with those three things, the voice is the input mechanism that lets you get the most data in the most quickly. So it's great to have that as another way of interacting with our apps.
Rose, have you done much with voice control in OmniFocus and the various apps?
I haven't, but that's because as a general rule, I don't like voice control as a thing. It feels incredibly slow to me and like it's more of a blocker for me than actually something that's assisting me. The closest I really get with voice control of things is when I'm driving. And then I really try to limit myself to just what Siri offers, you know, natively through CarPlay instead of trying to get fancy. I don't want to crash my car while I'm driving it because I'm trying to create a fancy new project in OmniFocus. It seems like a really bad idea. And then I'd have to create another project like for calling the insurance company and all of that. And I don't want to automate that. That seems like a really bad thing to need to automate. But I do love the idea of, you know, having all of this voice control, A, just as something for people who want it and for people who need it as an accessibility feature. And B, because I don't have a Vision Pro yet. I haven't even tried a Vision Pro yet. They're not available here in the UK, not even for testing in the Apple store. Like they don't even have like fake ones that you can like see the size of it or anything. But when I get it, I have a feeling that the way that you interact with it is going to change my mind on voice automation, at least to an extent. You know, I'm sure I'm still going to have my keyboard and so on around just like you can. But I, you know, I feel like that's where the voice control is going to make a lot more sense for me and actually click in my head versus at the moment where I'm sitting there in front of a device that has a keyboard on it anyway and has other ways of interacting where I can just do the thing instead of having to remember what the thing is called. I can remember a keyword and use some fuzzy search in the middle and ta-da, I'm there already. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what Vision Pro does for me because I need to get my hands on one of those as soon as I can so I can try it. I'm getting serious Vision Pro envy at the moment. It's okay. I'll have to wait on that.
You know how on like those TV shows when there's like a hacker there, you know, they're usually someone young, like around Rose's age, and they just sit down at a keyboard and they like look at the other actor and they go, bum, 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 and they hit that computer and like all this code flies in. And that's my kind of image of how Rose computes. It's just like, of course, voice is too slow for her. She's like somehow fused her brain into the computer at a fundamental level. And she just hammers the keyboard for a few seconds and things happen. And it's always because of your automation though, right?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of automation stuff in there. You know, like I've got PopClip integrating with OmniFocus on the Mac so that when I select certain things in OmniFocus, because it knows what application I'm in, it pops up things and so on. But even handwriting at times I find can be too slow for my brain. It's just one of those things where I have to just try and like dump the information out as fast as possible and come back and then process it and massage it into something that makes sense. And also, I tend to skip words when I'm speaking, when I'm just trying to like get something out of my head as a thinking mechanism. So that AI is going to have to be really creative to figure out like the 6 words that I skipped in the middle of that sentence that actually make it make sense. So yeah, I'm looking forward to giving it a real try on a platform that really it's designed for that sort of integration. And I think that that's, you know, that's where it will work better in many ways for me, at least.
Well, my brain has a low enough gear that the voice control is just fine. but I feel like more than ever, it's something I want to really kind of dig in on Vision OS, because clearly a future where we're wearing, you know, I don't know how far away this is, but a regular pair of glasses that has the ability to pop information on them. I think we're going to be using voice a lot in the future. And I want to kind of get on that bandwagon as much as I can now. One of the things you mentioned earlier, Ken, that I thought was interesting was installing automations on Vision Pro. And you mentioned it, but this whole idea of install links. And I'm not sure I saw this even covered in the news yet. I think it's a new feature you guys are bringing with this new version. But tell us a little bit more about how that works.
Sure. Yeah. I think we've only shipped this in OmniFocus 4.1, which is only on the Vision Pro. So it's in the 4.2 yeah. test flight as well, but that's probably part of the reason that you haven't seen very much coverage yet. It works simply enough. You just put a link on a web page that includes the URL that you want to download the plugin from. And so it's an OmniFocus link that says, OmniFocus :// I don't remember what it says, yeah. Install something or whatever. And then as a parameter to that, you know, it's the, in the URL, it includes the other URL that you're going to go download this thing from. And it just takes out that step of downloading it in your web browser, ending up with it in your downloads folder, and then having to go find it and open it again there, which sometimes that's really easy. Like if I'm clicking on one of those links in OmniWeb, I have OmniWeb configured to automatically open those downloaded plugins, and then it will go straight to that approval process. But we don't... we're not all using OmniLab, and we're using a bunch of different platforms. And so this makes it really easy to do in a consistent way, cross-platform, where you just follow a link and it puts it in the right app and installs it. You don't have to worry about it maybe being claimed by the wrong app, which is another thing that would happen sometimes.
This episode of The Automators is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Go to expressvpn.com/automators for high-speed, secure, and anonymous VPN services. And get 3 extra months for free. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is a bit like forgetting to mute yourself on Zoom, and then every person on every team in your company hears you blasting your favorite podcast. So why should everyone consider getting a VPN? Well, internet service providers, also known as ISPs, know every single website you visit. And depending on where you are in the world, your ISP could sell this information on to people who might use your data to target you with marketing. ExpressVPN reroutes your network data through a secure, encrypted tunnel so your ISP can't see your online activity. The best part is it's super simple to use. You just fire up the app and click one button. Plus, it's rated number one by CNET and The Verge, and it works on all your devices, phones, laptops, even routers, so everyone who shares your Wi-Fi can be protected. It is crazy how much information ISPs can get on you just by watching where you surf the web, and I don't like that. It gets even worse when you use public Wi-Fi, and people can try to get in the middle of you and your internet connection to steal your data and even possibly compromise your security. ExpressVPN solves all of these problems with a simple app and pressing one button. They couldn't make it easier. So protect your online privacy by visiting expressvpn.com/automators today. That's expressvpn.com/automators, and you can get an extra 3 months for free. That URL one last time, expressvpn.com/automators. And our thanks to ExpressVPN for their support of the Automators and all of Relay FM.
So, Ken, you have been, doing things on the Mac and Mac-adjacent platforms for quite some time, but automation is something that obviously is quite near and dear to your heart, because otherwise, I mean, I'm guessing OmniOutliner wouldn't have had AppleScript support, OmniFocus therefore wouldn't exist, and the world would be such a different place, and I genuinely don't know what I would be doing with my tasks. But what sort of things do you end up automating? Are you automating on a grand scale, small scale, everywhere in between? And what are you automating?
Sure. Well, I think automation really is a part of everyone's life over the last century or more, right? Since the invention of electricity, if I walk, I'm going down and I'm going to have breakfast, I'll have toast that pops up, after a certain amount of time, it's done its automatic thing. I have my the microwave, I'll have lights that turn on. And it's just a big sliding scale from the level of automation that everyone has sort of become familiar with and uses in their daily life all the time to, the crazy things that we talk about doing with some of our apps now, and everything in between. And so, unless you're on the cast of Survivor or something, you're probably using automation quite a bit all the time and just taking it for granted. And I think everyone takes automation for granted when it's completely familiar to them and that's, integrated into their lives. And then they, when they see something that is new and completely unfamiliar, it just seems like magic. And either it's scary magic or it's really easy magic. And so, part of what I try to think about is how can we make the magic in our apps be the easy magic rather than the scary magic. But when I think about what I end up building myself in the way of automation, as a programmer who writes apps for a living, kind of everything is fair game in terms of the technology that I use. So I'll write, I'll build custom apps that only I ever use. They're installed on my Mac or on my other devices. Nobody else is, I'll check them into Omni Source Repository so somebody else could use it if they wanted to. But we're not trying to publish it for customers. I'm just trying to make my own life easier for things like downloading App Store sales reports and then doing the appropriate tax reports from that. All of the sorts of stuff that go into daily routines. And so I might have an app piece of that. I might have a Python piece of that that does some of the work. I might have another piece that's written in Ruby, another piece that's written just in a shell, in Z shell or whatever. And of course, some AppleScript. Some of this stuff I haven't touched in a long time. Like it's been a while, I think, since I've written any AppleScript other than to check something out or demonstrate a problem to somebody else. But I still have AppleScript that I run that I've been using for a very long time. So I guess it's kind of all over the map, this sort of things that I will do with automation. But it's truly a part of my life. And mostly I don't think about it because it's just, it's set up to run automatically. A bunch of scripts will run every day or every hour. And it just lives there in the background. So I sometimes have to stop and think, oh, what is it that is going on in my life that has now become as background to me as the dishwasher and the toaster? And
For me, it's always when something stops working or doesn't quite work as intended that I then have to stop and think back of, okay, so I walked into this room and I was expecting the light to turn on. Or, you know, I opened this app and I was expecting, well, my next task to pop up. Why hasn't it happened? And it's usually because I was messing with something and I broke my own automation there. But yeah, having things actually become just, you know, everyday, everyday happenings rather than actions that you need to take, I think is a really nice way to look at automation, because that is what hopefully we should all end up with, right? Automation that just magically happens without us actually having to actively do a thing for the thing that we need to take place.
And that may be a little boring, unfortunately, in terms of what we can, you know, share with people. But I think it's also really exciting. You know, whenever I then stop and think about, oh, how much of my day now is just automated away, and I get to focus on my attention on other tasks that are more important to my life. It's just huge.
What are the areas of your life that you've been thinking about automating, but you haven't got around to yet? You've got to have something on the back of your mind.
Oh, absolutely. So that's a great question. So I do, like some of my automations have to do with things like backups, right? And some of those pieces are pretty well automated right now, but not, but they don't necessarily collect everything exactly where I want them to go. They all get to the RAID, but they don't necessarily get easily back to some of the devices that I'm using. And I'm thinking right now about how there was a time where a lot of my music collection was automated around through iTunes, and the way I would ingest content into iTunes, and then it would maintain a library that I could use all over the place. And iTunes has moved to try to simplify things and put most of, you know, if you want cross-platform iTunes, basically you're storing your music in the cloud. But I didn't want to store my music in the cloud. I wanted it on my own devices and then to have it shipped around to each of the devices that I'm actually using. So when I get to the car, it'll actually play off my phone, whether or not my phone is able to reach the cloud.
Can I just interject there? I feel like in some ways, automation for music has got worse. I mean, in the old days, in a lot of ways, the traditional, you know, iTunes and the iTunes smart lists and all the tools available when it was just a simple Mac app, I think in some ways were better than they are now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I miss that that time and that and some of those capabilities around being able to say, okay, well, why don't you give me a list of my 100 top favorite albums or whatever.
Or 100 top favorite that you haven't played in the year, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I'd had just the other day, there was a song that I wanted to play in the car. So I asked Siri to play the song. And so it said it was playing it. And like the first 20 seconds was just silent, to the point where I genuinely thought that, you know, like Apple Music was bugging out, or Siri was bugging out, or CarPlay was bugging out, or something. And then it finally started. It's like, but why did you play the one from Apple Music rather than the one that's in my library that I ripped from a CD 20 years ago? It probably is about 20 years old now. Oh my gosh. Because I know that one, and I know that one definitely starts at the beginning of the track. There isn't this odd 20 seconds of just silence that completely and utterly confuses me. Music automation's definitely got worse. But at the same time, now I have the ability to do SharePlay control in the car for shared music playlists. So, you know, there's features that are coming which don't necessarily make up for the loss of the automation features that we had, but at least, you know, we haven't just lost the automation features and gained nothing in return.
Right. So that's certainly one of the areas that comes to mind when I think about areas of my life that I wish were more automated than they are, where I still from time to time find myself manually loading music back to my phone again, because I've upgraded my phone and it didn't transfer over, and now I want to do the same. Of course, email is still kind of a big thing for me, where I feel like the automation used to be better when it was all Mac only. And now, so there's a slight pattern here maybe around as we moved a lot more of our computing to be across devices and be more ubiquitous, we lost some of the capabilities that we had polished up on that single device workflow. And and there's there are advantages to that, because I certainly wouldn't give up having my email or my tunes in my pocket. But but there are downsides too, and opportunities then to make things better.
I think this is, you know, one of the classic things that, you know, it's if we only had the Mac for things, you know, things like mail rules on the Mac would make so much sense. But as it is, mail rules for the Mac only make sense if I have a Mac that's always on and running. And even then, I might still get the email on my phone before my Mac processes it and potentially files it away somewhere else so that I don't see it. And, you know, for that, it is, you know, it's worth looking at as a lesson for the automation. I always try to do it at the highest level, you know, closest back to, you know, the core. So I don't use Apple's mails rules a lot, to be honest. I use them for, you know, I'll select the messages in my inbox and apply rules to them, but it'll apply rules and remove things that are like over a week old and things like that, rather than actually processing. It doesn't need to process the stuff as it comes in, because otherwise, you know, I won't have it. But trying to look at it from the perspective of there's, you know, all of the data is coming in all of the places. How can we make sure that we actually get the same result everywhere and the same power at our fingertips everywhere is pretty tricky.
Yeah. And so I'll end up using, for example, there's a Unix tool called procmail that does, you know, you can write different rules for processing the mail into different mailboxes. And I use that to process all of my mail. And but it's not something that I feel like I can tell my family, oh, here's how you should process your mail.
I'm not going to teach them
how to set up this
trying to get my grandmother to use procmail. That feels like, yeah, she only just about understands the difference between flagging and marking as unread now. And the difference is that they both have dots on them. The dots are different colors most of the time, but one of them adds the number back to the mail icon and one of them doesn't. But trying to teach her how to filter in procmail would definitely be scary. And it's definitely one of those things where, you know, do I want, you know, the ultimate tool that can do all the things, or do I just want the simple tool that can just, you know, it can just handle the basic thing that I needed to do right now? Do I have to reach for, you know, the full toolbox for my automations?
See, and like that's where I feel like AI again provides promise. Like whenever you look at an uncontrollable list of things, whether it be tasks or email, I would like to see a future where the artificial intelligence is smart enough to surface the stuff you need to see, gives your grandma what she needs to see, and doesn't give her, you know, all the other stuff. I mean, we have this huge problem right now with senior citizens getting hacked. I mean, it's just happened to a family member of mine recently. And she's like, oh yeah, but Microsoft told me there was a problem. I said, you didn't even have any Microsoft software on your computer. And then she called the number, and now she's basically, we got to fire her computer into the sun. But I feel like AI provides some level of promise to me. And that to me really, I think, is the next kind of frontier of this stuff. Like finding a way to do it rationally, logically, safely, but make our lives better. You know, that's an automation frontier in my mind.
Right.
Okay. Well, Ken Case, thank you so much for giving us your time today and coming in. If people want to follow up on what you're doing, Ken, where should they look?
Sure. Well, I guess the easiest way to stay in touch with what we're doing is to go to our website, omnigroup.com. And we have a blog, of course, and we have a newsletter that you can sign up for if you prefer to get things in email. And of course, you can find me personally on Mastodon. I'm at mastodon.social/kcase. At kcase, I guess. we'll put the right link in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll make sure the link is there for you.
And I would add to that omniautomation.com. I believe there's a dash in there and I don't remember. I have to look it up, but we will have a link in the show notes. It's just shocking to me how deep automation runs through your entire line of products. And as an automator and the host of this show, I just want everybody to know, you know, there are companies out there that are really putting the time in, spending the money to give their apps this kind of user customization. It's like the old days of AppleScript, but it works everywhere and I love it. So thank you for all your effort. I know that was not an easy decision. I mean, in the modern world, you got to decide where you spend money, and you guys chose to do it on automation, and we all appreciate it.
And for those who don't know, the Omni Automation website isn't just for JavaScript automation. You can also learn about shortcuts automation, or you know, you can learn how it interoperates with other apps and voice control, and of course, this new install links feature. All of that stuff is documented on there.
So. All right, we are the Automators Podcast. You can find us at relay.fm/automators. want to thank our sponsors this week, LinkedIn and ExpressVPN. If you are an Automator's Mac subscriber, we thank you dearly. That helps keep the lights on around here. It's a big deal to us. In Automator's Max, we're going to be talking about Ken's thoughts on Vision Pro. We're going to go deeper on that. And otherwise, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye, folks.